Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Going Old School Show, live on blogtalkradio.com, Monday, February 26th of the year 2024, zipping right through the second month, heading into March, speaking of March, we'll talk a little spring training as it has opened up down south for the Boston Red Sox and all over Major League Baseball, out west in Arizona as well. But let's bring in my cohorts for the day. Starting with, first and foremost, Mr. John Crow. JC, thanks for your time. How are you doing, buddy?
Not too bad. Happy Monday to you, Chips. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Excellent. Joe, welcome, and thanks for your time this evening.
Doing well, my friends. Doing well in these two.
These two what?
No, I said, how are you two doing?
Oh, we're doing well. I'm sorry, I meant Mr. Herbert. What's a Ute? Oh, we can go on about that movie. But anyway, lots to talk about in this next hour. We haven't been on for a couple of weeks. We're going to talk about Boston Red Sox, like I said in my outset. A little spring training underway and a couple questions for the guys. Ian Brown has his dark horse to make the team, make the roster come opening day. We'll share that with you as well. We're going to talk some WWE with the boys as we recap this past weekend's Elimination Chamber from beautiful, beautiful Australia. And I want to move there, guys. We'll get into that as well. But some really early morning WWE riveting chamber matches. So we'll get into that as well with the boys and preview tonight's WWE Monday Night Raw, if you will. But we're going to start, and we'll talk about the National Basketball Association and the Celtics. Breezing, but it's only the regular season. We'll get the boys' comments on that as well. But I did want to start off with a sad note. JC, back I spent 9-plus years at the Score in Providence when we were there. And in the radio business, we call our listeners a P1. And if you're a P1, you are one of our favorites. A listener, it's first choice to the radio, is usually considered a P1 in terrestrial radio business. And we lost one of those today. The biggest P1 I'll ever know. I think it arguably the biggest P1 in the history of my time at the radio station, when it was the Score, passed. JC, we lost Mr. Dolphin Paul Souza to a lengthy and courageous battle to cancer. Very young, gone way too soon. I can't help but say how my heart goes out to his family, his friends. We had some great times. A genuine person. What you saw was what you got from Mr. Paul Souza, a guy who captivated, kind of light up a room when he entered it. You know, very, very personable and very energetic, and we lost him today. And RIP Paul Souza, Dolphin Paul, the biggest Dolphin fan I know. You certainly will be missed. JC, if you want to say something, by all means.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, if there was a bigger Dolphin fan on the planet, I haven't met him. And, you know, that includes my nephew, Mark. And, you know, there are many a trip down to Miami that, you know, DP and my nephew, Mark, would have conversations over a few, you know, you sudsy ones down by the sea. And, you know, you mentioned DP as being a P1. He's part of the Score family. You know, yeah. He was there with day one with Scotty. And, you know, your heart just bleeds to his family, gone way too young. And, you know, just a sad day for all of us.
Yes, a very sad day. And I just want a heartfelt condolences to the family. And God bless them all. But, yeah, it's a sad day. And, again, it's a reality check day, man. Some things aren't that bad if you're having a bad day and something like this happens in anyone's life, for that matter. But I owe them big on reality checks, guys. And I'll stop it right there. But, you know, when you stop and think of what happened and what could be and how important it is and how blessed we are just to walk on this earth, it means something. And today it hit home. Again, rest in peace, Mr. Dolphin Paul Souza. You will be missed. But, guys, let's start off in the association, if we will, as we segue back into sports. And, guys, the Boston Celtics, JC and Joe, start with you, JC, 45-12. They're running away with this conference. They've won 8 straight. They're 7.5 games ahead of the second-place Cavaliers, and that is more games in the entire distance between teams 1 through 6 out west. JC, they're making it look very, very easy. But again, is it time we say, okay, this is what we expect from this team? You know, they look and feel the part. Maybe they've cured some ills. Maybe they're a little different. Maybe the DNA is restructured. But how do you feel about this team right now? Or is it all about the playoffs and what they do forward, JC?
The proof will be in the pudding. This is where they've won 8 in a row overall. They've won 8 in a row on the road. Mm-hmm. They lead in point differential on the road, at home. But they have to be like the 07-08 team, where every game matters. Not that you're going to win every game, but you're going to bring it every game. And that's what I want to see from this team in the second half. I don't want to see these nights where they just don't show up, where they think they can just throw out the jocks and win a game. I want them to bring it. And you've seen, you know, at times the maturity from this team where Tatum's taken a step back. You let Jaylen Brown, you watch him, first, third quarters are usually his quarters. And then Tatum takes over in the second and fourth. You know, Jrue Holiday taking a step back. Porzingis taking a step back. Let's say, Joe, if this team is willing to put in the work going through this second half so that when they get into the playoffs, first round, 4 games, second round, 4 or 5 games, third round, 5 or 6 games. So you're taking care of business and not taking every series to 7. Do you have the confidence that they can do that?
Not yet, but my question is, who's the Kevin Garnett of this group to keep them going and keep them hungry and keep them willing to fight, even though when the games are out of hand, even though when you've got an easy stretch of opponents, just to know that the goal is there. You got a goal. It's not to win the championship. It's not to win the season. It's to win the whole thing. So I just want to see how hungry they really are to win this and how serious Mr. Jason Tatum is over the last week of saying that he will be judged on how many championships he's got. Well, okay, so go out and get your first one and go from there, but prove to us that you want to go out and get your first one and not just give us lip service. And I'm with you. Don't take nights off. I mean, look, put the foot on the gas, and look, if you're that far ahead, then you play the second unit, the whole second half, and then you can get the rest of the night off. But it all remains. Look, we'll always be judged in Boston by how they do in the playoffs. So only time will tell.
Brad Stevens has done a nice job of putting with his maneuvers and trades, and I like the way he switches it up. We saw this in the past couple of years. Grant Williams gone. Marcus Smart gone. Two big subtractions from last year's team, and I think that's very important. He is doing his best effort, JC, to put the onus on this team like it has been in the past every years, without distractions, adding Porzingis, but the onus is back on Mr. Jaylen Brown and Mr. Jason Tatum, like it has been. But now, this is the cleanest I've seen the team as far as distractions to those two impeding their process to get to where they want to be, and that is to hoist that trophy, the Larry O'Brien trophy, you know, sometime in June. And I like Brad Stevens, what he's done. More pressure? Is there more pressure this year now on Tatum and Brown? I mean, I think there is, JC, but you tell me what you think.
I totally think there is. And I would give you even one more reason why there's more pressure on Tatum and Brown. Because their head coach, Joe Mazzulla, is better now than he was 1 year ago. He was a guy who was snippy at the media, snippy with refs, not knowing when to call timeouts, not knowing his X's and O's. I think he's done a really, really good job 1 year later in addressing issues and kind of manipulating his team and kind of pulling the strings. And I don't know about you, Joe. I don't feel so worried about him going into series as I did last year, where I thought him going into, you know, if you're going to go against an Eric Spoelstra, that's a no-brainer. I think you're 50-50 going into that series now this year.
Oh, I think so, but here's my question. How much of this has to do with the fact they've got two new assistants, who Sam Cassell and other ones who have helped him with his growth over the last year? Is it starting to finally show, and is he starting to finally mature and get with the program and get with the fact of that he's gotten better? And I agree with you. I think it would be 50-50 with Spoelstra, because last year Spoelstra ate him up and spit him out. This year, I don't think it would be that way. I think he would be able to play chess with him, and it'd be a good series.
Al Horford said after the win against the Knicks, which was real impressive to me, the way they pulled away, quote, "We're really trying to play the right way. This is the stretch season where we can really take it to another level, and that's what we're trying to do." This is the guy who's seen what I was just talking about in my last statement, the ups and downs, the failure to get to the failure, the clutch and late that hasn't been there with this team entirely for the past 5 years plus. This is the guy Al Horford has been there, JC, and I like what he said, because he still recognizes it, and I think he's one of the leaders of this team. He still recognizes that this team has a ways to go, and what are your thoughts on what I heard from him, because I like that quote after the Knicks win.
Yeah, not only did he say it, you know, he's that sounding board, that leadership, you know, on the bench, coming off the bench, but he rattled off four quick baskets in that third quarter against the Knicks, which was one of those games that was going back and forth. The Knicks, with Jalen Brunson going off for about 25 points in the first half, you know, due to a coaching, they let, by design, Jalen Brunson go off from three. That was by design by Joe Mazzulla. They said, play off him. You want to beat me? Fine. We'll take everybody else. And it worked. It run them down, and eventually the Knicks couldn't hit the side of a barn. But in the middle there, you're absolutely right, Chips. It was Al Horford stemming the tide. I believe it was like 67-64. Bang, bang, bang. All of a sudden, you're up by 10 or 12. And, hey, next thing you know, they're up by 20. It's amazing that they have found different ways to win. But it's if you listen to the media, it's still that negative nuance feel with them still as we head to March. And I don't see that going away, Joe, because it's going to be a show-me type of deal. I think it's still, and I point this straight at Christopher Gasper of the Boston Globe. It's championship or failure. And it's a line that he continues to bring up week after week after week on his appearance on NBC Sports Boston. And I think we all kind of buy into that now because we've seen the success. And is it really just that? And is it that, Joe, as we've seen in the dynasty with the Patriots?
Gosh, I've seen them. On the Felger and Mara show and heard him talk. It's like he's right, though. We've gotten to the fact of you should have had a couple of championships already with this core group, but you let it slip out of your hands. You just didn't have the willingness or the DNA, as Chips would say, to grab it all and grab the proverbial bull by the horns and just take it. And it was given to you a couple of times, and he didn't. So, yes, you're always going to have the edge of the media saying, "Oh, yeah, prove to us. I don't care what you do now. Prove to us." You know, as we say in Boston Bruins lore, there's enough Adams Division banners up in the rafters that you got to win it all to prove something, and especially in Boston. I think this year, look, I think right there you said that Al Horford is not playing as many minutes as he has in prior years. He's a second man off the bench. And what better guy, somebody like him with the experience and leadership, to have come off the bench? He seems to be getting, as the year progresses, more and more comfortable with coming off the bench. At first, maybe he wasn't as comfortable, but he seems like he's growing into that role. That's a big man on the second unit to help you go, especially seeing that Jaylen Brown plays the second quarter half the time, or plays spurts at times with four of the bench players. And Horford being one of them would be key of keeping the team going. And I think we'll be fine. But, yes, going back to the point, yeah, it's all or nothing. And they've kind of got themselves to blame for the media having that kind of attitude, though.
Yeah, and JC and Joe, I think they're deserving of that attitude. And if they were mature guys, you know, and I'm speaking specifically for Brown and Tatum and the other guys for that matter, maybe secondary, but Brown and Tatum, you should take that and use it as a motivator. Because, yeah, if you step back out of yourself and you realize that you've had you guys, you know, Jason Tatum, you're top five in the league. All you have to do is listen to what you say. You guys are talented, arguably the most talented team in basketball, and maybe there's no argument for that. And deep down, as players, they know that. So if you're being counted out, you're being skewed and fricasseed and under a microscope because you haven't performed to where you should have been, meaning, i.e., championship, be it one or two in the past few years, then use that as a motivator. That's what a mature person would do. Everyone's counting us out. They love it. Just ask Rodney Harrison about that, right? When he created that with a 14-2 Patriot team that was picked to win a Super Bowl. But they can carry that mantra, and you can galvanize you, and you yourself as an athlete can believe that in your heart of hearts, and that's what I want to see them doing. And, yes, it's championship or bust. Totally right, JC. That's how it should be. If it were the Red Sox, Patriots, Bruins, which it has been, Patriots-Bruins-wise, we've seen it, and even for the Red Sox, it's championship or bust. It doesn't change for Boston, for Celtics, JC.
Let me ask both of you this, and I'll start with Joe. Just think about this. If the Celtics do what we think they should do this year and win a championship, think of how the East plays out with Joel Embiid, another down year with an injury in Philly, mm-hmm. maybe wants his way out. Giannis and Dame not getting to where they want to be in Milwaukee, Cleveland, Atlanta with Trae Young now having the injury,
yep.
the Knicks not getting to where they be. Where does this play out going forward if the Celtics can take care of business the way they think they can moving forward?
So where does it take us? Well, look, I would say, going back to what you said, first round, four or five games. Second round should be another, I don't want to say cakewalk, but get your business done in four or five games and get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And even then, find me a healthy team that can challenge the Boston Celtics, because this team, if it continues the way it has the mirrors a team from a long, long, long time ago, from 1986, that from start to finish was the best in the league. Can they repeat? Can they do that? I say, look, there's been other years, JC, where the road became easier with injuries. Teams not so. They need to take advantage of it and be in the Eastern Conference Finals, but just put your mind to it. Set your mind to it. Don't take anything for granted and get business done.
JC, I think if first of all, they got to make the final. I mean, they have to win it, in my opinion. If they fail to even make a final with all the things you just pointed out, because I firmly believe that Milwaukee is the only team that can challenge them for this because of Lillard and Antetokounmpo and the reserves. And all Doc Rivers has to do, he got off to that slow start, but in 10 games in, all he really has to do is steer the ship. You want to talk about a Celtics team from, you know, 2006 that he managed egos? Just get this team playing well, and they've won two in a row since. That's a team that scares me. But if the Celtics fail to make the Eastern Conference Finals, I'll tell you two guys that I guarantee will be gone. Jaylen Brown with the big contract, someone will take him. And Mazzulla's out. Plain and simple. Maybe more changes. But if they don't, if they fail to make the final, there are going to be big changes with the Celtics team that come next year. Mark my words.
It will be very interesting with this team to see how they react fan-wise, organizationally-wise, to a team that gets bounced out anything short of a championship. It would have to be something drastic, I think, for Wick to not make. Because, I mean, you made the point earlier, Chips. Brad Stevens has done basically every right move he can make. Derek White last year, getting rid of Smart this year,
yep.
Getting rid of Williams and both Williams, you know, before, you know, it went bad for them, and bringing in Porzingis and bringing in, you know, it's worked out well for them. What else could you possibly do than make a 180-degree turn? And Joe, what, I mean, there is no equal value out there, is there?
For this team? No. I just don't see anybody out there. This team should do what it has to do and put their mindset to it. I don't see anybody stopping us because, for one, remember that the schedule was laden with hottest teams. It was the hottest schedule earlier in the year. And they said this, that the Celtics should breathe because they're coming through the easiest part of their schedule. Well, let me see. They seem to be, like, coasting along and at the right time, but it seems like everybody else is playing harder schedules, and we've got the easiest schedule, which means we should be able to breeze through. Maybe I can give these guys nights off, not, like, off nights, not playing, just off nights of rest. So there's no excuse, none, except zero, of why they're not in the finals. You're not going to tell me any excuse out there of why the team did not make the finals, because if they don't even make the finals, come on. I'm with Chip. You've got to make some serious, drastic changes because, okay, so what's your excuse this time if you don't make it? This team is, you got bench players, you got your role players, you got the best starting five out there. Tell me why we won't make the finals. Somebody tell me. It's gonna happen.
Final thoughts on the Celtics for our free throws as we move on. But looking at the Celtics' expanded standings, they are 22-1 versus teams below 500. Check. 23-11 versus teams above 500. Check. 25-4 in 10-point games. Check. In 3-point games, 4-4. Cleveland, Indiana, Miami, and Atlanta have better records in 3-point, i.e. close games. This is what I want to see from this Celtics team for the rest of the season. Granted, they probably don't have any control of it. Get in some close games, not by choice, obviously. I want to see them win some tight games, be it late. Win them at the buzzer. Win them in the last 2 minutes. That's what I want to see. More games, 3 points, 4 points, 5 points or less, go in their favor. I'll feel comfortable because that's been missing the past several years. When they get in these tight, close games in playoff times, you can say they don't rise to the occasion. You could call it rectus constrictus, if you will, but they don't. They are, haven't been clutching late in those close games, JC, and that's what I want to see in the final 20-some-odd games for the rest of this NBA season.
Yeah, you want to see some adversity, and I think this, it's what Joe Mazzulla was speaking to about a week and a half ago before, you know, the All-Star break, where they were playing some bad basketball, where they were, had a couple of bad games back-to-back and, you know, around the L.A. losses. And he wasn't getting freaked out, and he's like, listen, we need to find out how we can get over this ourselves. And I think post-All-Star break, it's only been two games, but I think they've handled it better than they have in the past with two road games at the Bulls, at the Knicks, you know, and they've seen shots where both home teams in both of those games have done exactly what you were looking for, Chips. They tested them in that third quarter, and then the Celtics rebounded and basically blew them out until it wasn't a close game in the fourth quarter. You know, I'm with you. I want to see that consistently, though, so that when they get till the end of March, beginning of April, they still have that mentality. Because if they have that two-week period again, end of March, that means they haven't learned anything. They need to treat every single game this way forward as if, essentially, it is the playoffs already. Have that mentality. Now, I'm not saying go with it in as far as intensity-wise where you're flying into the stands and stuff like that, because you obviously want to be healthy. That's the number one thing heading into the playoffs, is the health of your team. But, Joe, same question for you. What's the one thing you want to see from this team heading into mid-April?
I want to see a couple of teams punch them upside the head and see if they can get knocked down and pick themselves back up and still win the game. Can they win an ugly game? And that's, I just want to see somebody punch them in the gut, see how they react, and see if they can come back. I'm with Chips. I want a couple of close games. I want to see teams playing them tough. And I'm like you, John. I don't want to see them. Look, I want to see the intensity, but I don't want them, like you said, jumping into the stands and flying out the walls because, yeah, health means a lot. Keep KP healthy. Manage the time with him. Make sure he is healthy. Come playoff time, make sure the starting five are healthy. But you need to find out what we're made of if teams challenge you. And unfortunately, we can't control that. They can't control that. Well, hopefully they run into a couple of teams like that. They've got a game. I think they've got a few left with Milwaukee. See what they can do against these tougher teams. And only time will tell.
Tuesday, Philadelphia comes to Boston. Friday and Sunday this week, respectively, Dallas and Golden State, a little measuring stick to two teams out west. So kind of an interesting week for the Celtics. But we have a caller on the line from the 404 area code. I'm going into this blindly, guys, so let's go. Hello. I'm going to punch him up here. All right, caller, are you there? I have no idea who you are. Identify yourself, please. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, this is Naz, man. What's going on?
Hey, Naz, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Naz, what's going on, buddy?
How y'all doing?
Usually it's a 1-1-1 we get you from, but how you doing, brother? Good to call. Good to hear your voice, man. What's on your mind?
I'm just listening to you guys talk about the Celtics. Well, it's kind of interesting to hear, like, Celtics fans talk about this stuff. Ultimately, you know, they're the best team in the league this year. They've shown that. But, like, you guys are right to kind of criticize this group and say the Jays kind of have to get it done. Marcus Smart was taken off the team kind of in a way to make, I think, the two Jays step up and be the leaders. So, you know, we're going to see if they can actually do it, man. But the only thing that really concerns me is, man, Porzingis – always gets hurt. So the idea that y'all would be so lucky to get Porzingis for a full healthy season, because with Porzingis, I think you beat everybody, even Denver. I think a healthy Porzingis, you beat everybody. But without, and you kind of got to ask for more from Al and see what David Tillman can do, I don't know. It gets kind of tough, man. So I don't know. I just want to hear y'all thoughts.
I'll start first. Thanks, guys. I agree with you. Porzingis is the key. I mean, we knew when he brought him in, who cares what he does in the regular season? You need him to be healthy because they need that inside presence, because if you don't have him, and even when you do sometimes, Nas, this team, if they rely on the outside shot, if they don't hit from the outside, they're not going to win the majority of the time. Come playoff time, with the big bodies in the playoffs, if Embiid's healthy, look at the guys out, Milwaukee, Antetokounmpo, to name just a few, you need that big seven-footer, the unicorn, as he once was called, to perform and just to be healthy. You need him, so you limit his minutes now. But you're right, and I'm glad you called for, you're an out-of-towner, but this team has to step up and prove that. JC, you want to respond?
Yeah, I mean, there's two things with the unicorn. One, they can choose the matchup. They can pass the ball around. Everybody touches the ball. They can get him inside. They're number one in posting the ball up. He just turns and shoots over, buddy. But you're right. The health thing is a concern, which is why I think they limit him, and it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But also, man, you get him outside, he gets that three-point shot off so damn quick that his defender sometimes does not even see it coming because he's watching for his screen and coming across, and boom, the ball's in the net. So it's a matchup nightmare. And I agree with you, Nas. Against Denver, that is something the Nuggets may not be able to stop. I would love to see the series because I think it would be going seven. But without them, then you got to start thinking. Then you got to start thinking Celtics fans. What do you think, Joe?
No, you just nailed it right on top of that. You would have to depend more on Al. And I don't think Al is dependable past 15 minutes a game. And KP has had injury history where if you look at what he's played over the last 3 years, he hasn't played a full season. So far we've been good with it, but they definitely have to manage his minutes because without him, yeah, it's a tough road ahead, very tough road. Could they get it done? Yes, but it becomes a lot easier with Porzingis playing. So, yeah, that's the what you want to say, Boston's playing with fire because when they traded for him, they knew his injury history, and they were hoping to get 75% of the games with him, and so far, so good. But let's not jinx them.
Nas, who do you like? I'd be interested, Nas, because I know you're a hoops guy. Who do you like out west? Can Denver, is Minnesota or Oklahoma City a little too young to offset Denver? Because that Denver team, and boy, just watching this guy, Jokic, he may not look fluid, but he's so, so good.
Yeah, I mean, Denver is the biggest problem for everybody because ultimately when the playoffs start, you have to deal with whatever Joker is going to do. And then Jamal Murray is always a wild card because if you get, like two of those 35-point games in a series with Jamal Murray, you're probably going to lose. Like those explosion games from him, adding on to what Joker's already going to do. So, yeah, Denver's the favorite to me. The two young teams, they are vulnerable because as great as they are, you can end up in a first-round matchup with the Warriors or the Suns. And those two teams are better, but in a seven-game scenario against those veteran guys, they can kind of summon up a little bit of greatness and knock them off. So I want Minnesota to be special this year, but for that to happen, we'd have to see Anthony Edwards kind of make that leap that we're all kind of expecting from him. But that's a big ask, man. And remember, Clippers are still out there. Those old grizzled, guys, they're still there too. So, yeah, I think the West is it's not wide open. It's Denver and a couple possibles. And then out east, we just got, it's Boston, Milwaukee, everybody else is, they're just participating.
Yeah, they're just going to the dance. Nas, man, thanks for your call. Hey, call anytime, man. I have a number here for you. If you ever want to call and do a show with us, you're more than welcome to it.
I will do, man. Y'all have a good one.
You too, buddy.
Be
good. That's nice.
It's funny. He brings up Minnesota, and that's the team for me. Can they make that leap to be consistent enough to make a run in the playoffs. Because they showed against Milwaukee. They're talented enough, but they can't quite get up enough to get over the hump when they need that hoop in that fourth quarter to get it done. Because, I mean, obviously they got a talent with Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns, you know, but they can't make that leap. And Nas is right. It's like it's Denver and then it's OKC, it's Minnesota, it's Phoenix, it's the New Orleans Pelicans, it's Golden State.
Yeah.
You know, everybody in ESPN wants to keep telling us the Lakers are you know, a contender when they're not.
No.
You know, but it's one of those things where and I love the tenderness of Kevin Durant again, where they questioned his leadership and he's, you know, pouting off yesterday.
Oh, I know.
You know, again, he's so touchy. Oh,
so,
my goodness.
Here's a question for both of you quickly. Golden State, what kind of – do they have one last push in them? Do they have enough that they could turn the switch on in the playoffs and become a very formidable opponent in the playoffs?
They can be. I'll start, JC. They can be. I think it's all Curry. I mean, you, Draymond Green, there's still a pedigree there. I'm not sure Thompson's the same guy. But Curry's going to get his. And when he's on, he's on. That's the way it is. They're going to need someone else to step up. But you never want to mess with a team that's been there before because they've done it. And they've got heart there. And they can come up and Golden State can sneak up on you. I can't believe I'm saying that. But they can do that because they still got that juice. And, you know, they've been playing well as of late. They were buried 2 weeks ago. They are playing much better again at the perfect time of year. So if there's any team, any coach, Steve Kerr, Curry, and can get that team to flip a switch collectively, say what you want. And I don't think Steve Kerr gets a lot of credit, JC, but he's a darn good coach.
Oh, he's all playing, you know, first time, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame coach. And, you know, he's looking towards those playoffs by playing Klay Thompson off the bench now, getting those young guys the minutes
yep.
now, so that come first round playoff time, it's not, oh my God, this is now serious basketball that I'm playing. But I've been playing it for 6 weeks. And so, you know, he has the forethought to see it and do it. And when you put anybody around Curry, you're absolutely right, Chips, they become better.
Yeah.
Because that guy is just the best shooter of all time, this side of Reggie Miller.
yeah, it's unbelievable to watch. If you see some of the Instagram stuff that he has or what he posts on his social, shooting these shots from behind the, you know, behind, just throwing it up from behind the opposite court and switching it in just in practice or just doing stuff in an empty arena. It's incredible. It almost looks like, wait a minute, he's not really making this, is he? Oh, yes, he is. He's Stephen Curry. Man. But yeah, that'll be interesting, Joe. A good question, by the way, and thank you. So about 20 minutes left in the show. I do want to get into some baseball with John Crow and Joe Foran. Again, this is where the Going Old School show, live on blogtalkradio.com, February 26th of 2024. A little spring training, but we'll stay with the Boss Earth because I do want to hit on some wrestling the final 10 minutes. So we'll get a quick couple takes in with the Red Sox early on. Expectations, JC, in a sport where all teams at this time of year, with the exception of the Pirates, Joe's Pirates, the Nationals, the Oakland A's, the Kansas City Royals, you can basically say, no, they're not competitive. They're not, no chance of winning a World Series, much less getting to the playoffs. But I'm starting to think that that's the way it is with the Boston Red Sox. And you can say, well, they can compete for a wild card, but man, are we looking at the Red Sox as just a team that just has no hope or very, very little, JC, as we enter the second week of spring training?
They have zero expectations in my eyes. If they get to 500, it will be a shock. And I don't think they give a damn about it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. They want to sell those Bahama Bombers, you know, those shirts that they were showing yesterday on the game.
Yep.
They wanted to show the bucket hats. That's all they're interested in. If they were serious, they'd go pay Jordan Montgomery, who is working out in Boston.
In Boston.
His wife works in Boston. Go get him. Sign him to the team. He would open up opening day. But instead, this is a team who is already committed to Nick Pivetta as their opening day starter, basically. Brian Baio, They have no first baseman. They have no second baseman. They have no starting catcher. And they really have no starting everyday left, center, right fielder. All they have is Devers the third, Story at short. That's it. And to me, Joe, that's not a major league team.
Well, guys, you say that my team is the Pittsburgh Pirates. Well, I dare anybody out there to put a bet down. Who's got more? What's the over and under? Who's got more wins, Pittsburgh or Boston? Because Pittsburgh's probably got a better starting team than Boston does. Because right now, Boston is like, I've never seen a team as bad on the field projected in a long, long time. You got to go back to the, wow, I'd say the, couldn't even tell you, just like that's how bad they are. It's like maybe the 82 team or 81 team after they lost Lynn, Fisk, and Burleson, of how bad they are. And there's nobody there. And you know, at least other GMs have built up the farm system. But the farm system seems pretty laden and bare right now itself. So, oh, wait, we got Mr. Giolotto who is, wait for it, guys, because there's a lot of souvenirs that's going to be out there in the center field, right field, left field for the Boston Red Sox fans from other teams because, oh, wait, he led the league in gopher balls last year. Yep. So they're going to be asking him a question. That wouldn't have been out of any park. Yeah, you know, the AK Major League reference of, you know, how far did that ball travel? You know, there should be extra insurance on the anybody's traveling the Mass Pike this year. So, I mean, but bullpen looks solid. That's all I can say is, like, so.
Well, if it's good, they're going to be coming in the fourth inning in some games.
Just a bit outside, always. You know. it's disgusting. I mean, you finished in the basement 2 years in a row, and oh wait, we're going to spend $300 billion. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. That's golf. Never mind. That's not our baseball team. You know, how bad is it that the slapping fans upside the head, face? That's just an ultimate insult to Boston fans of what they're doing.
And that's where it is, Joe and John. It's the insult to fans during this whole offseason. What we've heard from Sam Kennedy. What we've heard basically John Henry's earpiece, John Henry's, you know, parrot. Well, obviously Breslow is one and Sam Kennedy is the other. So I think it's obviously one thing it's for sure. It starts with Henry now. We thought it was Heinblum last year. I'm convinced now, and I think we posed the question last week. We never heard from John Henry. Is he the guy who's orchestrating and saying, this is what you have to do because this is what we have to do? So it wasn't Heinblum's fault. I'm not saying he should be here. Maybe partly it was. But it's coming from top, meaning John Henry. So now we know where it all stems from. But don't insult the fans and don't call them, you know, liars, Sam Kennedy, during all this offseason stuff. Because that's where it lies. It's one thing if you go out and say, listen, we're not going to be competitive. I don't expect you to come out and verbalize what I just said, you know, maybe paraphrase it, but just say you're building for the future. See, we're a couple years away. I think you will be forgiven with a lot of diehard Sox fans because that's what we always want to hear from a team that's not doing anything, or at least the brass. Be honest with fans who are passionate, who pay big, big money to go see you play, because that's what it comes down to. You'll get your college fans there with the $9 seats. You'll get the tourists who'll come in and want to take pictures of the statues with Ted Williams and stuff like that in the majestic ballpark and the historic Fenway. You're always going to have the tourists. You'll never not sell out games there. Or you'll never not draw a lot of people. But just don't insult the fans as an organization. And, JC, I'm going to pose to you. Cody Bellinger, I would have loved to have seen his Red Sox, his left-handed bat in the Red Sox uniform. We talked about Jordan Montgomery. right in Boston's backyard. You have Blake Snell out there. You have Matt Chapman out there. Heck, I'll even bring back J.D. Martinez. But if they make a couple of moves, and I'm saying this knowing that there's no way in hell they're going to do it, by bringing in Montgomery and or Blake Snell, doesn't it make things that much better?
Oh, that's my question. It at least has an attempt to compete in 2024. By doing what they've done, they've shown no interest in competing in 2024. Meanwhile, everybody else in the division has gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
And they were already better than you to start with. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at a team like the Yankees, they're willing to take 1 year on Juan Soto and just take the gamble on it. Take the risk because they didn't win yet last year.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Red Sox finished last and don't want to take a risk on anything when they basically can print money at Fenway Park, like you said. You know, and on top of it, they just got two documents, you know, docuseries on Netflix. I can only imagine what that's going to look like.
Yeah.
You know, as we go through the season. You know, to me, the only difference between Breslow and Bloom is Breslow will offload talent more than Bloom will. Bloom wasn't willing to get rid of some of the veterans other than Vasquez last year at the trading deadline. Whereas I think Breslow will. I think he'll eventually get rid of Jansen. We just got rid of Schneider last week. You know, he's going to move some of those other guys who make just a little bit of money. So they'll just move them on and move them on and move them on, and eventually we will see the double and triple-A teams at Fenway. The question will be, as Rafi Devers said last week, what are we playing for?
Yep.
And it's interesting that the RedSox.com left that quote, that part of it out. We're playing for nothing.
Yep.
Yes, we're playing for money. We all get that. That's why they're professionals. But they all want to win. And if you take that part off of it, then when it's time to re-up, to make that decision to go or stay, they'll always say bye-bye and see, as Betts and Bogarts and so many others, and like Kiki did today with the Dodgers, they go to a place where you want to win.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Joe, I don't see that in Boston anytime soon.
No, it's like Billy Ball has arrived in Fenway, and at least they spent money on talent, whereas they don't even seem to be willing to sign the mid-tier guys to anything. They don't want, you know, they don't want to do any. It seems like I can't believe I'm saying this about a Red Sox ownership, but do they even care about winning? They just seem like, so what's it going to take for fans to totally turn on these guys? And I think a third total basement finish would be the ultimate breaking point for Red Sox fans with this ownership group. And then I think it becomes ugly. So if this year goes as it seems like it's going to go, fans are going to get ugly. I know you're going to sell a lot of seats still, but how many times is John Henry going to want to get booed out of a building with his mere mention of his name? Because fans in Boston, look, even in the 80s, 90s, may have not won, but at least we had teams that were formidable, and you put a product on the field. You know, you used to joke about the Tampa Bay Rays having a 4A team. Well, maybe the Red Sox would become a 5A team because they're just that far away from competing.
Well, what happens is those bulls will actually be cheers, because here's what's going to happen. The Red Sox will sell tickets. But you'll see Toronto Blue Jays fans invade Fenway like we saw last year, and they'll get the cheers. You'll see the Yankees fans come south from New York. and get in and see the Yankees fans. You'll see the Tampa Bay contingency break out here as well. You'll see the Orioles, who are really, really good and going to get better. Just look at Matt Holliday's kid, for God's sake, who made the jump from A, double to triple A last year. They're going to come to Fenway and invade it. So there'll always be fans in Fenway. There'll be fans of other teams. There'll be the majority, JC. And those are going to be the boos that will have to make John Henry do something different. But that, I mean, he's not hearing Rafael Devers, JC, calling out his ownership, calling him out. He's not hearing manager Alex Cora basically calling him out. Kenley Jansen has called him out. I should have to think that John Henry is not hearing any of this, and that's what's going to have to happen to make changes.
There's a famous line from the movie White Man Can't Jump with Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson.
Great movie, by the way.
It is a great movie. And the remake is horrible. Don't watch it. They're listening to Jimi Hendrix. And I remember, you know, Woody Harrelson said, "I'm listening to Jimmy." But then Wesley Snipes says, "But you can't hear him." And this is the case where John Henry, you know, he may, you know, listen to all this stuff, but he can't hear it because it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter to him because at the end of the day, if it's a Blue Jay fan, an Oriole fan, a Dodger fan, or a Red Sox fan sitting in that seat, it's the same $100 going in my pocket.
Yep.
And that's all he really cares about. And honestly, that's business. But that's not why business people buy sports teams. You should want to buy sports teams to actually win something.
Yep.
How long before the infamous Sox sucks is burnt on the infield in Baltimore?
I don't that's good. I don't know if that'll happen in Baltimore. I think they're a little more classy of a fan. Who knows? They're going to be too jubilant, I think. I don't know. But one good thing, Ian Brown on Rich Austin has infielder, outfielder Bobby Dalbec as his dark horse to make the team, which I would like because I like Bobby. I think he's worthy of another chance. Cut down on the strikeouts. He can play the corner outfields. And with Justin Turner gone, it may open up a spot on the roster. So I would like Bobby Dalbec. That's something I'm rooting for in the preseason. But John and JC and Joe, we got about 7 minutes left. I want to get you guys on to preview tonight's Monday Night Raw on the heels of what we saw Saturday in Australia. JC, I'll start with you.
Hold on, Jeff. Hold on. So, John and John, what do you want to talk about?
Very nice, Joe. Well, WrestleMania 40. Let's see. We teased a match with Cody Rhodes and The Rock on Saturday. Will we truly get that match at WrestleMania 40 on day one, Joe? Or is it something we get before?
I think day one is, I think you hit it on the head, JC, when it'll be Seth Rollins, Cody versus Rock and Roman, day one, main. And then you get the Cody versus Roman in day two. And something happens along the line where it leads to a long year of storytelling of the separation between the Rock and Roman, is what I'm thinking.
Let me throw a scenario out to you, and it may not be a good one if you're a Cody Rhodes fan, and Cody Crybabies will not like this. But what if, after all this, remember Cody Rhodes beat Seth Rollins 3 straight times when he came back?
Yep.
Well, Seth and Roman have a little history with the Shield, and he did teach him everything he knows, and What if he brings him in, and at WrestleMania, Seth turns on Cody, costing him everything?
That'd be good. I mean, you may, like you said, people may not like it for the Rhodes family, but that would definitely bring the Shield into play, and it would be, because Seth can go either way. Fans love Seth either way, but that would bring fans to liking Roman because he's become, you know, he's become dull. And that would kind of spice things up. That would actually, might work, might go that way, but I, that would throw a monkey wrench into the Rock building up with Roman, though. But that's a good point. That's a good, good scenario to play out.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you, Joe, though. I think they play it out like there looks like it's going to play out where Cody wins, and then they go forward a year, Roman versus The Rock for the who's going to lead the bloodline for next year's Roman, you know, WrestleMania. But I'm just throwing it out there because, you know, they do love the swerves.
My question is, who does the Ring General fight in WrestleMania?
That's a great question, Joe. And I thought he was going to be in the Elimination Chamber, and he thought he was going to win it, and he would face Seth night one, and it just didn't work out that way. And right now, he doesn't have anybody to face. It was, you know, it could have been Brock, but, you know, all the, you know, allegations against him got him out of there. You know, Randy Orton looks like he's going to face Logan Paul. AJ Styles looks like he's got, you know, LA Knight. It's, you know, Gunther doesn't seem like he has a challenge unless it's, you know, someone new coming in.
Who's the new guy that's signed with SmackDown from NXT? I can't think of his name.
Oh, Bron Breakker?
Could be him.
Yeah, I don't want to see him beating Gunther, though. Gunther's been carrying that thing for over a year, so
Gunther.
I don't want a new guy just up beating him.
No,
I mean, maybe Sammy gets him.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, but they've got to find somebody for him because that'd be a shame to get one of your better heels. I like better heels in this storyline, and to have nobody for him to fight would be an ultimate shame, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're trying to get the Usos versus the Usos, you know, Jimmy versus Jay, but they want to get a way to get the IC belt there and have a one-on-one. Maybe they make that a three-way, and one of the Usos wins the belt that way. That could be a way to get him involved in that match, since they're both kind of on different shows. But, you know, it will be interesting. Tonight will be a good way, I think, in progressing on Gunther. And tonight, you know, Rhea Ripley versus Becky. I mean, they both had an outstanding weekend in Perth.
Yeah, no, it was. Final thought, Joe. Damian Priest has got to catch in soon, so look for that to happen at some point before WrestleMania. I would like to see it, but time is running short for the man.
This is why you guys know wrestling, and I just sit back and listen. I go, we're going to preview Monday Night Raw, and you guys say, the hell with that, we're jumping right to WrestleMania. Love it, guys. Oh, great stuff, man. Put me in my place, and I'm sitting here. Anyway, guys, always appreciate your time, Joe and John. Thanks for joining me tonight. It's been great, and we'll do it again really soon. And take care of yourself, boys. All the best to you and your family, and have a great week.
Thanks, man.
Have a good night, right, gentlemen. Enjoy Raw.
Yeah, man, that's going to do it for Joe, for John. This is Sunchip saying we're out. We'll talk to you really, really soon. Everybody out there, take care, stay well, and by all means, be safe.